This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast. Well, what a week it has been. The superlatives don't really match the reality. It has been extraordinary and it's not over yet. The presidential election compounding the polls with a much closer outcome than expected. The market's very uneasy as the uncertainty continues. And as we speak, Joe Biden's on the verge of picking up enough electoral votes to become president. But the chances of President Trump conceding look very slim indeed at the moment. So far, the concerns about civil unrest haven't really become real, but who knows? Meanwhile, on this side of the Atlantic, England has entered national lockdown two. Oh, and Chancellor Rishi Sunak has extended the furlough until the end of March. And by the way, we've had the Bank of England pumping £150 billion into the economy. So let's speak to two guys who've had matchsticks permanently in their eyes over the last few days with sleep deprivation on a par with a Supermax prison. It's Ed Moyer in New York and Craig Earlham in London. How are you doing, guys?
Pretty good, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say it has been a hell of a week, and it's I'm sure we're all relieved that we're now heading into the weekend. But I can't even imagine what kind of a week Ed's had. Sat in New York, right in the midst of it, it must have been a hell of a ride. I think back to kind of the only thing I compare it to is Brexit back in 2016, and I remember how I felt at the end of that week, and I feel like Ed must be at least be on a par, if not worse.
The adrenaline is fading, I will say. It's been exhausting, and I think that we knew going into this, because we had that tremendous of early voting, the mail-in ballots, it would take time because the counting would not start for some states until after the last vote was casted in person. So it seems that you went through the roller coaster ride of emotions of, you know, early thinking the blue wave was going to happen. And then we quickly saw markets just start to, you know, price in that presidential reelection for Mr. Trump. And now it seems that now that we're getting all the votes cow tallied, it looks like Biden is overtaking Trump in so many key states. So it seems that his victory is imminent. But even though the president is blaming voter fraud, and he's building his legal case to try to delay some counting, trying to build up that argument that some of these votes should be taken away. But I think most of the signs, and there's been no evidence, it seems that this election is pretty much going to be finalized in the coming days, if not sooner.
Yeah, if it was a bit more like 2000, Ed, when it was just one state that was causing the controversy in terms of recounts, etc., as in Florida, then it'd be a different kettle of fish. But because, as you said, there are so many different states which, although extremely close, you know, less than 1% in two or three of them, there's enough there for Joe Biden to actually get over the line, isn't there? Despite the fact that Georgia, for instance, there's a recount, and they've officially announced that today. And it could be a couple of weeks before we know the actual result. But as you said, it won't really matter, will it? If, for instance, he gets Pennsylvania in the bag and Arizona and so on.
Very much so. I think we'll have a recount in Wisconsin too, but Nevada. I mean, like right now, everything is looking like it's going to go to former Vice President Biden. So I think he's looking very optimistic. I think there's, you know, we can't call a lot of these states just yet, but there's nothing really that should change the trajectory. I think we're seeing that we're looking at, as these counties report, the percentages are holding, and a lot of cases it's like 60 or 70% are going to Biden, and only 20 or 30 to President Trump. So I think you're going to see that, you know, that you could tell by the market reaction that they're you know, completely pricing in a Biden presidency. What's important, though, is for Biden to be able to, you know, bring on his team to hire people, because, this dragging this out is really hurting his administration, because he really needs to be able to appoint people. And by President Trump dragging this out, it really will make it difficult for him to kind of, kickstart his initiatives when he takes office in January.
And we were talking last week, we were surmising whether there might be some civil unrest if there was a very close call. And that hasn't really happened. I mean, there have been odd bits and pieces of arguments, and but no riots. The boarding up of the shops across the United States obviously wasn't really necessary in the end, but that's good to see. Although, you know, you talk about the fact that Biden can't actually pick his administration yet. I've just got this feeling that Trump is going to let this roll, because he's got to look after brand Trump, hasn't he, regardless of what happens with president. And he could actually go on and make the case politically that he was never really a beaten man, because he can go on and say that he was cheated.
That's the narrative. And there's been wide speculation on what the president would do if he lost, and whether it's creating his own media network. It's clearly obvious that he still has a tremendous following. His election support, you know, I think was over 5 million than what Hillary got in 2016. So it's a lot greater than I thought in going into this election, but his support is strong. And I think that what he has done to the political system in the U.S. has changed it. And I think whether if he goes the media route and tries to have his own station, he's going to have a tremendous amount of followers. And and there's even talk that he might even consider making a run for 2024.
Yes.
So the scenarios are just, they're plentiful, but I think that we ultimately will see Republicans will pressure him to move beyond this, because it's just bad for everyone if we don't have that smooth transition of power.
Craig, how are markets closing the week in London? A bit nervy about what's going on in America, or a little bit more relaxed than we may have thought?
I think the market reaction this week has been absolutely remarkable. I was very much in the camp of those who believed that the worst market outcome was going to be pretty much what we've seen, a closer election, a contested election, and it's been viciously, viciously contested over the course of the last few days. You've seen it straight from the word go, from that incredible press conference with President Trump on election night, effectively claiming that his party's being ruined. Ever since then, it's been fiercely contested. And yet the markets have been so relaxed. They've been so calm. And I think that's been incredible. There seems to have been this underlying confidence that regardless of what Trump says, whatever he does, whatever legal challenges he puts forward, that it's not going to change the outcome. And I think that's an incredible amount of confidence in these markets to have that belief. But it's carried on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's only today that we're starting to see a bit of profit taking. And I do think that's probably twofold. I think, one, it's a reflection of just how well these markets have done over the course of the last 4 days. And I think, number two, it is because it's the weekend and you just don't know what's going to happen over the course of the weekend. And I think the combination of those two things means that we've just seen a little bit of cash being taken off the table. Obviously, I do think what's helped these markets in their rallying has been the Republicans seemingly keeping control of the Senate. What that does is it means we get a slightly smaller stimulus bill when it is agreed, but it also means it's going to be very hard for Biden to reverse certain tax cuts. It's going to be very hard on the regulation side and some of these market unfriendly policies that the Democrats have talked about. You could effectively have a lame duck president for the next 2 years at least. So from that perspective, you've almost it's not necessarily a bad outcome for the markets. The obviously risk is what Trump is doing in contesting this election and causing problems that way. And I think maybe we'll see how things go over the weekend, and we may see a slightly different attitude next week depending on how this situation evolves and whether and just how strong Trump's case is. I think it helps the market right now that he's not provided any evidence, that a lot of these legal challenges have been shot down, and that it seems that he's kind of going on a whim at this minute and hoping that the evidence can be gathered over the course of a few weeks while these kind of delay tactics are put in place, while he calls for the recounts in various states in order to try and stop the Biden effectively being declared the winner of this presidential race. So we may see nervousness kick in later, but at this moment in time, it's been incredible just how confident and relaxed investors have been this week.
Yeah, it's been a good result really for markets, as you said, because of the Senate, the Republicans keeping that, and it looks like goodbye to President Trump. And he has created a lot of uncertainty, despite the massive amounts of tax cuts and what that did for the US economy. So I think, generally speaking, markets are happy. What about the jobs report today, Ed? What happened there? Some good numbers?
Very much so. The labor market recovery continues. I think there was some growing concern that we could see much smaller job gains. And I think everyone, you know, will take notice of the unemployment rate, which declined significantly to 6.9%. And that came alongside a strong bump up with the participation rate. But there's still a tremendous amount of permanent job loss that's in the labor market. And I think you're going to see that there's a worrying part to this report. And the lack of benefits from Congress, I think is really going to start to become an issue, because you're starting to see that while some jobs are coming back, the trajectory of COVID-19 is pretty much assured that we're going to see new restrictions here, and that's going to cripple economic activity, and we're probably going to see a lot of these jobs quickly go away. And I think when we take a look at what's happening with the virus, there's, you know, we topped 100,000 cases per day, and it seems that in just a matter of a few weeks, we could be at 200,000. So the virus spread is worsening here, and also in Europe's already starting to enforce these lockdowns. But I think you're going to see that the labor market recovery is really going to struggle during these winter months, because we're going to see more lockdowns. And with the Biden presidency, he's going to really stand by his argument of a mandate for face masks, social distancing, but more importantly, if lockdowns are needed to stop the spread, he is going to put the pressure on governors to do that. So I think you're going to see that many people are expecting it to be a little bit tougher for the labor market recovery. And that's why I think, why are we seeing the market be so much stronger? It's because there's still that expectations that the Fed is going to be there. So labor market just kind of, I think, queuing up what's going to happen in the winter.
Just a thought that occurred to me, Ed. We've still got Donald Trump whenever for another 2 months. Are markets not worried about things that he may or may not do in the next 8 weeks, just out of sheer craziness?
There is some concern, but I really believe that you're looking at the Republicans, the Senate, for the most part. Not only Senator Graham and Cruz are kind of standing by the president. They've been loyal to the president, and they feel comfortable in their standings. Graham got reelected, and a good amount of their base supports the president. So I think they feel they must agree with a lot of what he is saying.
Okay. Right, Craig, over to you now. As I said, we've entered national lockdown 2. The furlough extended until the end of March. You didn't necessarily see that coming this time last week. We had the Bank of England, our central bank, pumping just a mere £150 billion into the economy. A quiet week.
Well, someone's got to buy all that extra government debt, right?
I mean, yeah.
If it's, you know what I mean? It's like, this is what we're seeing. This is the trend we've seen this year. Governments commit to spending billions, hundreds of billions more, and the central banks step up and offer to effectively buy it on the secondary market. So it has been a strange week, hasn't it? The extension of the furlough scheme, obviously it was inevitable that the furlough scheme was going to have to come back because of the lockdown, which started on Thursday. But the extension to the end of the March, I think, was the bit that caught people by surprise. We've got to remember, this is a government that hasn't wanted to overcommit to anything on that type of side, and has been heavily criticised, actually, for that. The idea that they waited until the day before lockdown began to announce the extension of the furlough scheme. It doesn't give businesses the greatest opportunity to prepare. And how many jobs have been lost in the interim when it became clear that a lockdown was going to be necessary? It just goes to show that the government could have done a lot more to reassure these businesses in May. We'll only learn in the next month or two how many jobs could have potentially been saved had they been more decisive earlier on. So the fact that they've done it to the end of March now maybe suggests they're learning a couple of lessons from the experience of the last few months and the criticism which has come their way. And it will reassure businesses. The flip side to that is what message people are taking from it, which is, hold on, you told us this lockdown was going to last 1 month. Why are you having to extend it by another five? So I think people are maybe reading too much into it at this stage, maybe anticipating that the government has more lockdowns planned or an extension of the lockdown period planned. And again, criticising the need for that.
Or maybe it's just the fact that, as you said, they realised that in order to secure the millions of jobs for at least another 3 or 4 months, they have to create that level of certainty. And even if we don't go into another national lockdown, because we're going to enter a period now, December, January, February, where things are going to be so uncertain, a lot of people will lose their jobs anyway, even if there is no further lockdown.
Absolutely. I think it's just that. I think it is trying to provide businesses as much reassurance. And we have to remember that we're coming out of this lockdown in a month, hopefully, all being well. And every region isn't necessarily going to go into tier one or to tier two. There is going to be, you expect there is going to be some places which are going to stay in tier three. So they're going to continue to need that furlough support scheme for businesses that aren't going to be allowed to reopen. So I think this is just a way of trying to assure businesses that the government effectively has their back and try and retain as many staff as possible. And I think the Bank of England announcement coming the same day, people will try and draw a link between the two. But we've got to remember, we've been talking about the Bank of England increasing its quantitative easing programme now for a number of months. It was clear right from the word go that the previous increase in the quantitative easing programme was only going to see the bank through to the end of the year, so that more easing was going to be needed when this second wave arrived. So I think the timing of it is probably more coincidental than people would like to otherwise believe. It was more than the market was expecting. The market expecting 100 billion of increase, but they've increased it by 150 billion, effectively seeing us through till the end of next year, all going to plan. There was no talk of negative interest rates, really, though. They did say that should it be necessary, they can add more bond buying if needed, which I thought was interesting, maybe suggesting that while they are still investigating the possibility of negative interest rates and preparing for the possibility of it, it's not something that is even nearly imminent. So I thought that was a bit of an interesting development on that side. But broadly speaking, they're one of many central banks who are going to be easing over the course of the next month or two. We've spoken about the ECB before. They will be, I'm sure, adding to their bond buying programs in December. I think the Fed could even go as well. And also the RBA, of course, this week started quantitative easing and also cut interest rates as well. Many, many central banks all in easing mode, because this second wave means more lockdowns, means more economic hardship. And even those countries that don't enforce lockdowns, the spread of the coronavirus is going to encourage people to spend more time at home and is going to have negative economic consequences.
Very interesting. Let's talk about the next 7 days. Obviously, we still don't know exactly what's going to happen timing-wise as far as the presidential election is concerned. We genuinely think that Joe Biden is definitely going to be the next president of the United States. It's just a question of when, if President Trump concedes. Do you think he's actually going to concede it? I've got a feeling he won't.
I would be surprised if he did.
Because he'll regard himself as a loser, correct?
Yeah, he likes to control the narrative. And I think he's
Do you think
he's
he'll turn up for the inauguration?
I would be surprised if he did. I don't think he would.
I mean, yeah. I think it's interesting that that there's not many Republicans at the time of recording that have come out and effectively abandoned him, or there isn't very many voices at this moment in time. So I think until that happens, I think you're both probably spot on. I don't think he is going to be willing to concede. I think it is going to take a mass abandonment of Donald Trump in order to do so. And I think there's a lot of Republicans out there right now who are going to be very are really going to want to avoid that as much as they possibly can, because while they want to reinforce the kind of the U.S. democracy. I think they can see how passionate the yeah. Republican base is right now and how divided the U.S. is right now. And I don't think they want to suffer the consequences of abandoning their president. So I think they're going to want to avoid it as much as they possibly can. But the longer that this drags on, the more it's going to be necessary, because you're effectively heading into a potential constitutional crisis here. And yeah. I don't think the eyes of the world are on the US right now, and there's only so long this can go on before it starts to become a massive, massive problem.
Yeah, they're definitely worried about their own Republican base, that, you know, who would be Trump supporters who would have voted for them, and they'd be worried about the midterms in a couple of years' time, and because people do have long memories. What should we look out for then, apart from this situation, if there is another game in town over the next 7 days? Anything that stands out?
Well, I think we just had a Fed meeting, and we're going to have lots of Fed speak next week, and everyone's going to be looking for cues, because I think the Fed decision, you know, it was pretty much went as expected. There were no big surprises, but Fed Chair Powell signaled a very downbeat assessment on the economy. His concern for COVID is very relevant, and it's likely to force their hand, as Craig highlighted, into doing action in December. I think what we're going to see too is there's a lot of these emergency lending programs that are supposed to expire at the end of the year. I think we're going to probably get more signals that they're going to extend them. I think the Fed chair also kind of highlighted that he had extensive discussions on modifying their asset purchase program. So everyone is going to be listening to the Fed speak. We're going to hear from, I think, a handful of speakers throughout the week. So that's going to be what I think people are going to be taking their cues from. You know, a post-election week, it's hard to really get excited about anything in particular, but there are a lot of big events happening. I think you're going to see Brexit trade talks. You know, as the sand runs out, I think you're going to see that there's going to be more pressure to see whether or not, you know, any progress is made. But I think, you know, Craig will talk more about that. For oil prices, I think it's going to be critical. There's going to be the largest virtual strategic conference, the ADIPEC, is going to occur, and you're going to see all the big energy ministers attend that on Monday. And everyone's expecting OPEC to possibly deepen cuts, because the COVID situation is likely to really deliver a demand shock again, and we're going to probably look for some comments that these oil producing countries are going to be more open to that. With the rest of the week, I think you're going to see there's going to be a lot of focus on the tariffs that the EU can trigger against the US. That's for the retaliation of the illegal aid to Boeing. So that's on Tuesday. So you're going to see, I think, many people see, do they follow through on that? I think there's been you know, some hesitancy, especially from Germany, to begin tariffs. So I think there's going to be a big amount of discussion over that. I think in the middle of the week, we also have some economic data from. Actually, we have that rate decision from New Zealand, which no change is expected, but I think it's important. I know Craig highlighted most of the big central banks, but New Zealand is an interesting story, because I think the consensus is that they're going to go negative at some point next year. So I think everyone's going to be looking to see, is that going to be brought forward? So that happens on Wednesday. With the rest of the week, you know, we also have a holiday in the U.S., a Veterans Day, so you'll see a lot of markets there. So thin conditions, so you could see some exaggerated moves on in the middle of the week. Lastly, I think to wrap up the week, you know, we do have some data, the U.S. CPI, but that's really not going to move anything. It's just going to be mostly about Fed speak, and then on Friday, we have a couple of GDP reports across Europe and Asia, but we also have the U.S. Michigan confidence numbers. So steady data throughout the week, but I think for me, I'll be all about the Fed speak.
Indeed. And Craig, Ed alluded it to before, the Brexit talks continue. I mean, with all that's been going on the other side of the Atlantic, you can be forgiven for even forgetting about the Brexit talks. What is happening at the moment, and could we get a deal next week even?
Yeah, it's been interesting on the Brexit front because it's been very quiet, and I think that's a good sign. We've spent 4 years now hearing this bickering in public, this one-upmanship on a constant basis, and it feels like we finally got to a point when both sides have agreed to stop that, to get serious, to it's time for compromise. It feels like that week off did everyone a lot of good. It kind of allowed everyone to rebalance, to put themselves back on a level playing field and allow for a deal to be reached and for compromises to be agreed. So it's been very quiet the last couple of weeks, but I'm feeling optimistic on that front. But we are now pushing it in terms of time. It's now the 6th of November. I think we need to see something next week. By this time next week, we need to be at least be hearing that we're very close to an agreement being reached, because there just needs to be, it won't be enough time otherwise for this to be ratified. We're used to this going to the 11th hour, but I think we're very, very much approaching that point at this moment. Like I say, I'm still very optimistic, and I think the reaction that we can see in the market suggests that everyone else is too. So I think that's there isn't too much more to update on the Brexit front, because there just hasn't been the usual level of drama. The other thing I'd highlight, because it's covered everything else quite well, and I think from a data point there is a lot of low tier data next week, so I do still think the election is going to continue to drag on unless we get a surprise concession over the weekend. The only other thing I'd highlight is something that you, Johnny, typically refer to as my favourite topic, which is Bitcoin, which seems to have grasped people's imagination once again. This week, it's just been surging on a daily basis, and we've gone back above 15,000. In fact, I think we came very close to $16,000 today. That's the first time since January 2018. It seems that the Bitcoin enthusiasts are excitable once again. Now, whether that's going to be put down to US election uncertainty, or whether it's to do with risk appetite soaring back, or whether it's central bank easing. It hit a low around $4,000 back in March, and now we're back at $15,000, $16,000. So it's been a phenomenal rise since then. Maybe all this central bank easing has got the chatter starting again about the role of Bitcoin in the future. So I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about Bitcoin, because we're $4,000 basically now off the all-time high, and I think that's going to put it back on people's radar. So I'd keep a close eye out for that, because we're seeing really kind of Bitcoin level gains, 8%, 9%, 10% once again, and I think that's only going to be exacerbated now that it's going to be more in the headlines.
Okay, guys, well, I wish you well. Try and get some sleep. Obviously you've been working very, very hard this week, and it will go down in history. Absolutely, it's going to be live long in the memory. Final thoughts from you, Ed, before we say goodbye.
Everyone to stay healthy and happy.
It's a good way to end the week, and have a very restful weekend if you can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.